Hello everybody, welcome to Optional Opinion here on the Nominous Radio Network. I'm your host, Eddie V. Thank you guys for tuning in. Hopefully everyone had a good week. It is Halloween weekend, so hope everybody have a good Halloween party, that they be safe, that's on the road. Thank you everybody for reading The Beauty of Video Games, where I covered Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. Thank you to all the people who helped me with the podcast, Johnny, Adrian, and John O'Hagan, part of our new podcast, which will be coming soon, that you guys will be able to hear. Can't wait for that to be loaded up. But I have a very special guest joining me on today's topic, which is the love of the forgotten, where we're going to be also, where we're going to be talking about, some of the companies and their, games and hardware that we still love to this day. They actually paved the way and made some history in the video game industry. So we just want to we want to pay our respects to them. And joining me is Mr. Ryan Beeman. He is part of our new podcast, what was it called again? I'm about to say the Delusional Geeks Podcast.
Deluded Geeks Podcast.
Deluded Geeks Podcast. We have had a good time recording and talking about it, coming up with the names and stuff. But that is our new podcast here on the Anomalous Radio Network. We were formerly the Critical Hit Anomalous, but we no longer have that name. We have evolved, like Pokemon. We have evolved. And Ryan is part of the group, and I asked him to join me to talk about some old retro stuff and some of the unknown. And Ryan, before we get into it, thank you for coming to on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Can you just give us a little bit of your gaming history?
Basically, when pretty much right out the womb, I was playing my dad's Atari 2600. Spent a lot of time playing a lot of PC games. Hung out with a lot of friends that had some of the earlier, like Nintendo and all that good stuff. Of course, that winter when Super Nintendo came out, we were lucky enough to get one of those, and all of a sudden, I became the big kid on the block with one of those guys. Gaming's been in my blood for as long as I can remember. I've played on just about everything. Sega, Nintendo, Atari, even a lot of them that we're going to use. I think actually a few of them that we're going to discuss tonight are probably the only ones I have not had a lot of experience with. But, it's still there. I still know it. It's still part of me,
and that's the thing about retro games, they always are a part of you. Just like you, I went backwards. I started with the Nintendo, and then I went back and played the Atari 2600 because my mom had one. We actually had the 2600 and the 7200. So we had the little small black one with the little silver and rainbow that said Atari 2600. And the 7200 was the wooden panel one that we had. It was the big wooden panel one. We had that. And that's where I played Miss Pac-Man. Pac-Man, not Road Rash, but there was a motocross one, and I cannot think of it. We played a lot of, even Popeye. Played Popeye and Mario Brothers on Atari.
Oh, man, I miss that Popeye game. I love that game.
It only had that one in the track. And to get into Spanish and stuff. Yeah, Atari is actually, Atari and Nintendo kind of shares a foundation definitely for me, because of playing the 2600 and the 7200. And I really, oddly, don't remember playing any Pole Position. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I really don't remember playing a lot of Atari-style games in the arcade. I guess I was playing more Evolve, but we'll get into that later. What about you, Ryan? Let's start with Atari. What were some of the Atari games that you played before the Atari video game crash, I should say? Atari, you know.
God, I think it's the shorter list of ones that I haven't played. Because, I was lucky enough that my dad, he was always kind of a nerd, too, even though, back when it wasn't cool to admit it, but he was. He had just about every Atari 2600 game that was available. I forget the name of it now, but there was a game where you basically had to like swim around like an octopus. It has a name now, but literally, literally on the cartridge, it says name that game or name this game. Cause like they didn't have like a name for it.
Really?
You know, they just been on. Yeah. God, I wish I still had that.
Oh, wow.
The E.T. game, that god-awful game that should have never been used.
Still to this day, I've never played it.
It's bad. I mean, it's pretty unplayable. Plays E.T., you wander around, something might happen, and something comes out of nowhere, grabs you, and that's it. You're stuck in a thing, and you don't know what happened.
Wow. Pitfall, I could never get past the first board. I did the swing, and somehow I would end up, I think there was an alligator or something I jumped over, or I think I hit a rock. It was something, like the third or fourth screen I could never pass, and I just gave up on Pitfall.
It's one of those that because it was one of those two that you almost weren't sure where you were going to make the game make sense too. So, if you weren't going the right way, you might not even know you're not even going the right way. But, there's a lot of Atari games that were really like that. Just being the ones earlier on, it was definitely harder to kind of get the point across, with the, such little graphics.
What was the one with the man with the boner trying to get to the Indian woman? I cannot think of that name. It's one of those the sex games. It's bad, and people could probably say I've never played that too. Like the naughty games, I never played. Like beat them and eat them.
I never played that one. At least not the Atari ones. And I knew they existed. But yeah, I know which one you're talking about, but I can't think of what the name is off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's a real known game, but it's completely. I know it's completely bad. Burger Time.
Oh, Burger Time.
I remember.
Classic.
I think White Castle even had a game.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Because it was like blue and black that I remember. I think Asteroid came to Atari.
Yeah, Asteroids was on Atari. I think just about like all the basic ones, like the Pac-Man. Galaga was originally on that one too.
I had Pac-Man Jr. also.
Oh yeah. Oh man, yeah, Pac-Man Jr. I can go a lot on the Pac-Mans. I think all three were on there. Yeah, Pac-Man Jr., Miss Pac-Man, Pac-Man. Uh-huh. I think they were, all on the original Atari.
On the original Atari. Which was weird because Pac-Man was very basic because they had blue lines. No, they had yellow lines instead of dots.
That's right, yeah.
I don't know about the I think you had the fruit. But it was very, just generic, very basic. I'm just like, what in the world is this? And then I guess when she played Miss Pac-Man or even Pac-Man Jr., it got a little bit more advanced. I remember Centipede, Frogger, which I used to play over and over again.
I remember they had, some of the earlier, I guess you can call them RPGs, like the Adventure is what they're called. I remember it was Fire World and, I forgot what the other one is now off the top of my head. Actually, for my birthday, I've got kind of one of the You know, things are just easy, like plug into your TV and start playing.
The plug and play?
Yeah, one of those, but it's like for Atari. And it was like just about every Atari game that they could throw on there without needing the license. So it was basically just like Galaga, Pac-Man, stuff like that. But yeah, some of those adventure games, trying to figure those out. I mean, you go on one screen, it's like a quick little like transition screen, then you're on basically the same screen but different colors.
Yeah.
And somehow there was a game in that somewhere.
Did you play Combat?
Oh, Combat, yeah.
And you just
the tanks?
Yeah. I used to do the tanks. And the Atari had two ports, which is going to be funny because I don't know if you ever realized that the Sega Master System and the Atari shared the same ports for their systems.
I think I read somewhere that a Sega, I think, just kind of took the same technology setup to do like their own controllers.
Oh, really?
Something like that, yeah. Because I think like Atari, the way they made them, because since it had so many pins, somehow that Sega was able to modify it so that one of those pins basically was the D-pad, and then the rest of the pins were the different buttons.
Yeah, because their D-pad for, and we'll get this when we get to Sega with the Master System. Their D-pad was like, it was square, but the edges was round. It wasn't like a block square, and they had like little lines to indicate the directional. Because Nintendo had the directional pad. You know, the cross, and they had that copyrighted or trademark that no one else could use it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
So that's why, that's why when you see like Xbox now or even some PC ones, Sony PlayStation, how they got like it's separated is because Nintendo got the pattern. I think it's the patent. They got that patent that it belongs to them. Because Atari was just like a joystick with one red button.
Right.
Which is funny because it looks like a stick. Like when like when you're in your car, like you do manual instead of automatic.
Yeah, exactly.
So
like it's just super, super simple.
Yeah, so. And then later on, after the video game crash, Atari kind of came back. And they did the Atari Lynx and the Atari Jaguar. The Lynx were their handheld system, which pretty noble. I think no one really cared about. Like, whatever. And then the Jaguar just was trying to make a comeback, but that didn't get off the road. Actually, someone took a dentist took the Atari Jaguar and made it to like some dentist equipment. like they repainted it and they somehow engineered it and it was helping them clean people's teeth.
Oh, that's crazy. I've not heard of that.
Yeah. It's pictures. It should be online and stuff. It's kind of like the Kinect that when the Kinect first came out, people engineered it to do other stuff than what it was meant to do.
Yeah, but you know, I think Microsoft kind of almost designed it that way too. Is that if you knew what you were doing, you could program that like a ton of different ways. I think it's kind of what they marketed it less as a gaming platform as they did a kind of an open ended sort of thing.
Yeah, and I know they stopped doing, I think now they're doing, like, PC games, because I know they still had some financial trouble, because somehow they did a remake to Alone in the Dark. I guess they own that property, and they tried to do something with PC, but it was broken. I think they tried to re-release it for, like, PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, but that didn't go nowhere. It was, like, really broken. Like, they say it was really bad. And people just kind of forgot about Atari. You know, and if you actually read the story about Pitfall, I know Game Informer has one. I don't know what issue it is. This is sorry about that. This is how they came into about third party and stuff. Like, you people who made games for Atari, they couldn't name themselves. Like, they couldn't put themselves in the credit. Like, they couldn't credit themselves. And so with Pitfall, the people who made Activision, the people who made who left Atari and formed Activision, they were able to rig the Atari 2600 to do stuff that it wasn't meant to be done.
Yeah, you know, I heard some of the Atari 2600 was actually very hackable, from what I hear.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But I didn't know none of that. I think everything that came out of for the Atari came straight from Atari.
Yeah, it almost kind of seemed that way. But, you know, I think it also at a time, too, where the whole, you know, line between, like, developers and publishers was, you know, very, very blurred. It's, yes. You know, it's at a time where people didn't really pay attention to it that much. So you can kind of get away with doing kind of stuff like that.
And I know the box art was for the Atari 2600/7200 was it would be one color. Someone drew a retro style picture. Like it kind of tried to look like the low polygon, but it wasn't. And they would have like in a corner, maybe like a rainbow or the color or like some colors that like, match the box, and it's like five like different colors. And then you turn in the back, and I think it was two screens, and then like the description of what the game was about, and that was it.
Yeah, they're very very simplistic. It was almost like maybe a little bit of original art, a bunch of clip art, and just like one color like in a box. Yeah, it's you know, they're very simply done back then. You know, back before, you know, this is back when, you know, it was more money to just get the game out there, basically.
Right. And they made a lot of money off of it, but then it ended up being a burnout and nobody was buying it, which allowed Nintendo to come in and rescue the video game industry and release the Nintendo Entertainment System, which celebrated 30th birthday Sunday. So, congratulations, Nintendo. Congratulations to the NES for 30 years. And still, to this day, people are still playing the system, buying games on the Wii and Virtual Console and 3DS. People are going in and buying. There's a trailer out for this game called 8-Bit Hero. They just released their trailer yesterday, and you could probably look at it. And I think it's a Kickstarter that's applied to it, and it looks really good. Talking about this guy he found, this doesn't have nothing to do with Atari. He found some documents that he drew and said that, you know, he wanted to make a Nintendo game out of it. So he found it in his basement or he found it in his attic and was talking to his friends and he was getting a team and they even molded a Nintendo cartridge.
Ooh.
So it's a documentary for right now, but I don't know what ended up happening with it. So I think they're doing a Kickstarter, and they didn't give it a release date when that movie comes out, but I am looking forward to it.
I want to check that out.
Yeah.
Just wrote that down on my list.
Yeah, they released the trailer, and you guys can not link it or anything, but 8-Bit Hero, like documentary, you can look it up and see. It might also be on YouTube, the trailer that they show. Yeah, I know that Jaguar, one of the biggest game on there was Tempest. I think they had balls on it, BALLZ, which was a fighting game with different kind of balls on it. Like the balls were shaped to be fighters. I really don't know much about the Jaguar, like with games and stuff. Like it really didn't last long. I know they said it was supposed to be their 64-bit system, but it was actually 32-bit. Like, it really wasn't that powerful. And the Atari Jack, the Lynx was tried to compete with the Game Boy, but it didn't.
Yeah, I think at that point, Nintendo basically just had such a big chunk of the market. And I seem to remember both of those, when they first came out, were really almost like prohibitively expensive. And I think just no one could afford them, really.
Yeah. But, well, they even something even like with the 3 Duo was just expensive, but the games weren't there, you know.
Yeah, I can. I think they just had a couple of. Yeah, I'm trying to even think of like a 3DO. It's almost like just maybe a couple of like those Zelda like movie type games that.
No, were, that was CDI. That was CDI. Well, yeah, CDI.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. That's the story. The story with the Zelda was that when Nintendo didn't go with Sony to do the PlayStation, was because they decided to go with. I think it's one of the stories, but allegedly they decided to go with the with Panasonic and do with the CDI. So that's how the Legend of Zelda games ended up in Hotel Mario. That's how the games ended up on that system.
That's right. That's right. Now it's coming back to me. And then, yeah, and then Sony was like, well, we got all this great technology. Let's just make our own video game system. And, yeah, we know the rest of the history on that one.
Yeah, and you guys can hear about that podcast. Just check Optional Opinion on SoundCloud and the Anonymous Radio Network. And listen to me and Johnny Romek talk about Sony. So, yeah, anything else about the Atari?
No, I think we covered that pretty nicely, actually.
Okay, so when we come back after this break, we're going to be talking about Sega, and we will be right back. And we are, sorry about that, I feel like a fly got out of my mouth. We are back, and we are actually talking about Sega now. Now, Sega has a very, very long history if you look at it. With their systems, they had the Sega Master System, the Sega Genesis, the Sega 32X, the Sega CD. They did a combination of the 32X and the Sega CD, like the Genesis and Sega CD in one, the Saturn and the Dreamcast. And they was also makers of their own arcade. So they had the Naomi arcade board, which was able to do Dreamcast games. They was able to transfer it. And they were Nintendo's biggest rivals back in the 80s and 90s. I know that I only system that they also did the Sega Game Gear when it got into the handheld space, and they did a Sega Network Online. That's where you was able to play remakes of Mega Man 1-3 online. Like Sega TV, I think was the name of it. So yeah, only ones that I did not own for the Sega systems was the Game Gear, even though I played it at my friend's house, and the Saturn was the only ones I did not own, and the 32X, which was an add-on, but I just didn't have it. Oh, and Sega CD, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think Sega's been one of those companies that, you know, they've always been very, very innovative with a lot of the things, probably almost like ahead of their time, which, you know, I think when it comes to video games, can be a double-edged sword. You know, kind of look at, you know, Virtual Boy to a certain extent, and, you know, a couple of things Nintendo's done, and PlayStation is kind of notorious for, especially with some of their portable systems. But yeah, like, you know, I think the Yeah, the Saturn was one of those that was, you know, probably a little more on the expensive side. But from what I hear, that was able to do quite a bit. I'm trying to remember. Let's see. Even, like, compared to, like, the original PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was able to do, like, a lot, from what I hear, a lot more than what the PlayStation was even capable of. Almost to the point where developers didn't even really know what to do with it.
Well, they had some kind of card that she was able to put in the Sega Saturn to help loading process, because they did a lot of fighting games. The Sega Saturn was able to handle 2D games better than the PlayStation. Unfortunately, though, it didn't. The release was kind of terrible, the launch, because they came to E3 and just said, yeah, the Sega Saturn is out for $600, like right now, at their press conference. And didn't nobody know that it came out that day. It was like, wait, did Sega just announce the system, the release of the Saturn? It was just like, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically all it really was. I mean, they made all kinds of, you know, add-ons for the Genesis and, you know, they tried pushing that for as long as they could and then almost kept the new system a secret. It's almost kind of what it felt like.
Yeah. I know with the Sega Master System, they had two cartridge ports. And let's start with the Master System. They had two cartridge ports. So they had a card part that you could put in, or you was able to use a cartridge part. Their cartridges, the boxes for them were for the main cartridges, like kind of like big Genesis cases. If you look at them, they look like books almost. And they would have like a pamphlet inside for the instructions. And in the middle, they would have the cartridge. Now, the cartridge was black. It had three like lines, like space lines. And then the tag that was on them was like a maroon and black that made it look like squares. And then in white writing, like the sentence, they had the name of the title. So, the Hue cards, not the Hue cards, the cards, the like really thin cards, they kind of look like credit cards almost. But they had like the chip at the bottom and then they had the design of the card at the top. These cards almost look like the TurboGrafx cards, which we'll get into later. The graphics for the cards look like their box art. So, my brother, he actually had two Sega Master Systems. And since Sega was also big with arcades, they would bring their arcade games to the Sega Master System. So Space Harrier, I don't know if you ever remember that game. That came to the Master System. And for the card, Ghost House and My Hero were some of the card games that came to the Sega Master System.
God, yeah, I'm trying to remember if I've even been around a Master System. I think it's probably one of the few that I've not really had much experience with, actually. I did a lot more with Genesis, but yeah, not a whole lot of Master System, come think of it.
Were you around when the Nintendo was out?
Oh, yeah.
Then you just probably didn't have no one, like a friend or something, that had the Master System. Because it was out around the time when the Nintendo was out. Because the Genesis came out, I think, in like 1989 or 1990, before the Super Nintendo. But the Master System had a lot of games out. They had two controller ports, like I talked earlier in the Atari segment. But their controller port, their controllers were kind of almost like Nintendo, but they were gray and black. They had one or two instead of BA. In the directional pad, they had, like I said earlier, a square with curved angles on the controller. They also had like a stick one, and it was kind of big. It had the one or two, and the stick was kind of like to make you feel like an air pilot or like that you're like got a stick when you're driving. Some of their biggest games is Wonder Boy Monster Land. They had the arcade version of Double Dragon, which is different from the Nintendo version. They had a Space Harrier, like I said, Outrun and Outrun was one of them. My Hero, Space Harrier, they had this alien game, and I cannot think of it, where you had to go in and save your crew members. They also had Zaxxon 3D. So actually, the Sega Master System was the first to actually do 3D gaming. So you would have these black glasses to put on to see your game in 3D. They only had like, I think, Zaxxon 3D and like one more other game. It did come with a gun, so you could play Gangsta Town and some other ones. There were two versions of the Sega Master System if you pressed the power button. And one of them was a snail game that you would go through a maze. And the other one was a hunting game and some car racing game. Kind of like Pole Position, almost.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, next, after the Sega Master System, they had the Sega Genesis. Now, you might know more about the Sega Genesis, Ryan, so I'm going to let you go start off with the Sega Genesis.
Yeah, well, the Sega Genesis, I remember they did end up with a couple versions of that one where I know they were kind of cleaning that up. I think it's basically almost kind of the same time with actually just the original Nintendo, because it was kind of one of their big edges that they did have a more powerful system at the time too.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, and I remember, I think a lot of that too was good marketing. I remember even with like Sonic the Hedgehog, they were talking. I remember the big buzzword was blast action processing.
Yeah.
which they were saying, yeah, Nintendo, there's no way they can replicate that, and I think Nintendo. I can think of one game where they kind of proved them wrong was, it wasn't Nintendo themselves, but, I remember they did like a Roadrunner game and all of a sudden it was doing the exact same thing Sonic the Hedgehog did.
Yeah.
I remember, oh man, they've had so many good things on that one. Kid Chameleon, was yes. always, like, one of my favorite ones.
Yes.
You could transform just about anything there. Actually, I was just playing a Golden Axe the other day, Streets of Rage,
Streets of Rage 2 is better than 1.
Is it better? Yes. I can't remember which one I was playing. Actually, as a matter of fact, I wasn't even playing that one, the Genesis. I was playing that one on Dreamcast, where they had like the re-release of that one.
Yeah, I did too. If you was playing Streets of Rage 1, it was 3 characters you could choose from, because Streets of Rage 2 had 4.
That's right, yeah, because, I always kind of compare that to, like, Final Fight with, like, Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
And it even, like, the Super Nintendo version wasn't even, like, the better version of the game, because you can only pick 2 of the characters in that one. But, yeah, it's, I think almost Streets of Rage had, like, it was one of those examples where, like, Sega definitely had, an advantage over Nintendo, like, processing and just it performance-wise, really.
Right. If you look at, actually, Streets of Rage 2 was one where you could tell that it was a little bit more enhanced, and kind of was like a really big competitor to Nintendo, because Nintendo didn't have no beat-em-up games from Nintendo, where, Streets of Rage 2 had the music, had 4 players, do tag team. They brought 2 characters from the first one and then brought in 2 new characters. It was actually, I think, the only game that had 2 black characters in Streets of Rage 2. In Streets of Rage 1, you got to play 1 black character, Axel.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right. Yeah, because off the top of my head, I can't really think of anything else that really had that at the time,
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, because I was going to say, it's a, back in the day, I was always like a bigger Nintendo fan than I was a Sega fan. But, I could definitely appreciate what the Sega Genesis did, because, it really kind of made Nintendo have to really kind of step up their game when it came to, like, to releasing the Super Nintendo.
Oh, yeah. Of course. during that time, Nintendo and Sony were still working together because Sony actually produced a Nintendo sound chip. That's why the games. That's why the games sound like crisper and cleaner.
Yeah, it's a. I think even if I recall correctly, I think even Sony did quite a bit of like the insides of like I think even like original Nintendo and the Super Nintendo for that matter.
Well, I know they produced. They did some Sega CD games too, because they had Peter Pan on the Sega CD.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, I think. I think at the time Sony was really kind of you know, since they weren't in the game market, they really could kind of, you know, be in just about everybody's, you know, everybody's hands. And, you know, I think Sony, I think, really kind of learned from that, too, when it finally came for PlayStation.
Yeah. And with the Sega Genesis, the first edition of the Sega Genesis, I should say, it actually had a headphone port that you was able to plug in your headphones in. And it had a slider for the volume that went up to like 10. It had two control ports, still like the Sega Genesis. I mean, yeah, still like the Master System, but the Genesis only had three buttons, A, B, and C. So when Capcom signed on to bring over Street Fighter to the Sega Genesis, they ended up doing a six button controller. So it was A, B, C, X, Y, Z at the top. Super Nintendo came out with a six button controller, and Genesis had to make up for it.
Yeah, you know, I think it was also kind of, you know, speaks to like the versatility of it too, because you know, they were able to do all those sort of add ons to it without, you know, I'm not sure Nintendo was really able to do a whole lot, you know, like extra peripheral wise with that. So it was definitely something that Sega had advantage over. I mean, even just I remember when Sonic and Knuckles came out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of the first DLC, I guess you could call it. You know, it's kind of the gramp of it all. Where you basically could add, you know, the existing games onto that and be able to play as Knuckles. It was kind of unique how, you know, it had that uniqueness to it that they could just add on to it without, you know, seemingly a lot of effort.
Which was weird because they had. With Sonic, because that's the one that you can put like Sonic 2 on it too, right? Like you could put another cartridge on top of it, correct?
Yeah, because you could. Yeah, it'd actually take Sonic 1, 2, or 3, and or you could just play it by itself, and you could pick. Yeah, it was its own game. Or if you punch in, you know, 1, 2, or 3, you can actually play as Knuckles going through those existing levels.
And I gotta say, Sonic 2 is one of my favorite games out of the whole Sonic series. Like, from level design to music, I still like the Sky Tail level, where Tails is flying in the plane and Sonic is doing the jumping. The music along in that game is just wonderful.
You know, nothing induces panic like being underwater for too long. And I mean, even to this day, like if that was like my ringtone, I would pick up my phone so freaking fast it wouldn't be funny.
Hold on, when he got the bubble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Actually, my brother, when he got the Sega Genesis, because that's how I played it, he had Michael Jackson's Moonwalker.
Oh my god, I love that game.
Yes. And Moonwalker, so yeah, Moonwalker was actually different than the arcade version. But of course the Sega Genesis came with Alter Beast, Rise from Your Grave. You know, which was also a big arcade game. So you can see you know, Golden Axe was a big arcade game that came to the Sega Genesis. Aeroflash and this Phoenix game were they like 1999. One was from Renovation and one was from Namco Bandai. They used to do like really cheap games, like you could get for $20 on the Sega Genesis. EA was a big supporter, so you would have NBA Live or, you know, the NBA games on there. You would have Joe Montana. On the Sega Genesis, which was actually supposed to be Madden.
That's right, yeah, because Madden, I remember back in the day, he said, "I'm not putting my name on anything unless it's going to be like a football simulation. Like, yeah. I think, like in some of the earlier styles, like they didn't have enough processing power to be able to have two full football teams.
Right.
And yeah, and Mann was like, yeah, that's not going to have my name until it does. So they at least got Joe Montana to put his name on it.
And that's so like wildfire. I remember, I actually beat my brother once in Joe Montana 1 and once in Joe Montana 2. Like he always beat me in football. I'm bad at sports games. But that game sold tremendously. EA actually had to have that a yellow chip to make it like 24-bit to make it like actually run. And you would be able like to see the animations that they did. It was a little bit slower, but you was able to see it. Cause the cartridges was designed different. So they was a little bit longer and then they had that yellow, like yellow tab or yellow chip inside of it, I guess to help it make run smoother.
You know, I was pretty sure I actually had it here, and it was just as we were chatting. I'm like, oh man, I want to dig that out now and actually like look at that.
Yeah, take a good look at it. They had some good RPGs like Phantasy Star 3 and Phantasy Star 4, which was also on the Sega Master System, where 1 and 2 was. But Phantasy Star 3 and 4 was like one of their biggest RPGs. Konami ended up coming to the Sega Genesis, and they, instead of bringing Turtles in Time, which came out for the Super Nintendo, they brought the Hyperstone Heist. So it kind of shared a little bit similarities, but then it actually split off. They also brought in Tournament Fighters, which had more of a comic feel, which was in space, where Turtles Tournament Fighters for the Super Nintendo was based like in New York, like the streets of New York and like pools and undergrounds and stuff like that. They brought Rocket Knight Adventure, and they also brought Contra, called Contra Hard Corps, which was like a two-player game, and you already had the weapons. You just had to select which one that you wanted to play.
And you know, it's almost, I remember as a gamer back when too, it was almost kind of like a gamble on which system you were back in, because you know, I think all of us being younger at the time, like, geez, I was probably 10 or under at that point. So you know, you always almost kind of like backed one system or another. So you're either like a Nintendo kid or you're a Sega kid. So you know, depending on what your big franchise was, because you know, like I had the Super Nintendo back when, you know, and the Tournament Fighters on that one was fantastic.
Yes,
but you know, yeah, like not being able to play that the Genesis one, though, uh-huh. You know, I remember that just killing me back when.
It was, I ended up buying it for like $20 because it was actually darker on, the Super, not Super Nintendo, on the Sega Genesis. Even Hyperstone Heist was kind of different. Like it looked almost the same, but the sound of it was different.
Yeah, I think almost just the way the coloring worked on the Sega also, it worked better for some of those, you know, like a darker feel games. I mean, yeah. Even like Splatterhouse and stuff like that. Say if you compare that to, say, like Friday the 13th on Nintendo. It almost had like that. It was better almost for that sort of feel, I think.
Which was weird because Splatterhouse 3 came out to the Sega Genesis, while 1 and 2 came out for the TurboGrafx.
That's right, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I forgot that was originally that one, yeah.
What else did they have on the Sega Genesis? Well, the Sega CD was this add-on, and they bought full motion video. So you got games like Night Trap. You was able to play Snatcher, which was Hideo Kojima and Konami. It was based off of the Harrison Ford movie where he was with the androids. And I cannot think of it.
Blade Runner, I think.
Blade Runner, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So, and I wrote a blog about it. I said that Snatcher was actually better than Blade Runner.
Ooh, yeah, I've never even seen Slasher, actually.
Snatcher?
Or Snatcher, rather, yeah. Yeah, I haven't played that one at all.
Yeah, it's an adventure game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, a lot of the CD stuff on the Sega Genesis, it's you know, I only had one friend. He had just got it, and then basically moved away like the next week.
Oh, wow.
So I think we played a little bit of like Sega CD for a little bit, or Sonic CD, and yeah, that was about it.
Wow. They had the Crisscross and the CNC Music Factory with Make My Video. And I think Scottie Pippen had one, too.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, if I recall correctly, too, I think that one Aerosmith game, too, that was out. But Revolution X, I think?
Yeah.
It was like a shooter game. I think that one was even on Sega CD.
I think so. I believe so. I know... let's see. It wasn't on Sega CD. I know Sonic Chaos was on 32X. Shaq Fu, Eternal Champions was Sega. I think 1 and 2 was Sega's fighting game. You can check that one out. There was one with like Kung Fu Animals, like, and I cannot think of it. That came out to Sega CD and. The Sega Genesis. They brought Virtual Fighter to the Sega Genesis.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because it was able to actually do that 3D landscape at that point.
And Time Killers, which was the fighting game, came out to the Sega Genesis. It didn't come out to Super Nintendo. Because Super Nintendo actually didn't want blood M-rated Metroid games on their system. That's why when you play Mortal Kombat on the Super Nintendo, you see like brown stuff, which is sweat.
Yeah, that's right. It's a, you know, I know Nintendo was always trying to be more of the family friendly at the time, and yeah, Sega's just like, hey, bring the blood. We'll take it.
Well, Sega brought their own rating systems before the ERS SBK.
Oh yeah, that's right. They're kind of the originators of that.
Yeah, because they had MA-13 and MA-17. So Mortal Kombat, I think, came out for Sega CD was MA-17.
That's right. Yeah, because in my opinion, even like nowadays, I think they even did that better back when by having like, you know, mature titles which were like more teenage age, and then the mature titles which you got to be grown up for this one.
Because Senator Lieberman, he like brought it to Congress, and they still have that meeting on YouTube, and you know Nintendo kind of threw Sega under the bus. And that's where the ESRB like came, and they end up changing the rating system, which that's how Mortal Kombat 2 came out for Super Nintendo with the mature games, because they seen that Sega was actually making more money with Mortal Kombat, even though you had to put the code in to get the blood for Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, that's right. I think at that point, Nintendo, you know, I think it was almost kind of a smart move on Nintendo, because I remember feeling back in the day that you know, I think Nintendo kind of played that smart where they were like, you know, all, you know, Sega's got all these mature titles, and you know, it get all the attention to them, and then later on just like, you know, we're gonna sneak on a few more adult oriented type stuff, like, you know, sneak in the blood as a code in Mortal Kombat 2, and I think even they had like the better version of Mortal Kombat 3 on Super Nintendo at that point too.
Yeah, I know they also had Mickey Mouse in the Castle of Illusion for it. They had some Capcom games like Ghouls and Ghosts. No, Ghosts and Goblins. No, Ghouls and Ghosts. That came out by Sega on the Sega Genesis. So they had another shooter one that I cannot think of, where you got to spin your carrots around like in a circular motion while he floats. That's when Capcom had Zenny as their money, Zenny. And moving on, and later on, they brought out the Game Gear, which was a battery drainer. Mortal Kombat 2 looked horrible on there. Sonic was okay, but it was like missing music and sound effects, and didn't no one really care about it. Actually, the Three Ninjas, that movie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they was like part of their whole thing was using the Game Gear.
Yeah, they had that in that movie, and I think they also had a game for Game Gear.
I think they did, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Shinobi came, I know the Revenge of Shinobi and Shinobi 3 came to the Sega Genesis.
That's right. Yeah, because I think Shinobi was fully Sega at that point. I think they actually developed it too.
Yeah,
back when they were, or at least one of their studios did. I think.
Oh. I know they have Columns was their like jewel puzzle game, and Sonic Spinball, but we won't talk about that because that game was just complete garbage. They had Arch Rival, NBA Jam, and I think they brought Arch Rivals to the Sega Genesis. I know that game came out for Nintendo, but I think they brought it out for the Sega Genesis too. I'll have to check.
I think they did. Yeah,
Pat Robinson Basketball. Real Knockout Boxing or Real KO Boxing they had for the Sega Genesis, which going back to the Sega Master System, I don't know, but they did have Rocky for the Sega Master System.
Oh yes, I think I remember actually playing that once. Yeah, it's I think I actually remember seeing that somewhere, like way back when.
Yeah, because you fight Mr. Apollo first, which is the hero of Action Jackson. I forgot what his name was. He was the main character in that. You fought Mr. T the second round, and then you fought Dolph Lundgren, and as the final round.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's bringing back some memories.
Yeah.
I know I've seen it somewhere.
like I said earlier, they bought Street Fighter Turbo Champion Edition to the Genesis. They also brought Final Fight. They brought Final Fight CD, which was the arcade version of Final Fight to the Sega CD. But I never seen it. I never seen that one. At the time, Konami brought out Zombies Ate My Neighbors for the Super Nintendo and for the Sega Genesis. That's when like both games were getting released for the same system once Super Nintendo came out.
Yeah, you know, I think it was kind of a very unique time because I think since Nintendo and Sega were like the two big ones, you know, I think they were always like trying to coax, you know, people to try to like, you know, get exclusive.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was back in, you know, when you're programming on completely different platforms. So of course the games are going to be different. And I think that one was one of the first ones that finally was like close enough to being, almost identical really.
Yeah. Besides the sound, I know, that's where Treasure comes in, which is ex-Konami employees, and they bought Guardian Heroes and Gunstar Heroes to the Sega CD. I mean, to the Sega Genesis. I think Guardian Heroes came out for the Sega... No, Guardian Heroes came out for the Saturn, but Gunstar Heroes came out for the Sega Genesis. So if you like Contra, I think those were the guys who made Contra. They ended up bringing that out.
Yeah, I remember playing those a little bit actually. Yeah, it definitely has like a very, it's more like a cartoony version, but yeah, it's very much like a Contra game.
Yeah, after the 32, or not 32X, after the Sega Genesis, I thought they were supposed to do something called the Nomad, but I don't think that ever came out. The Sega Saturn came out as their next console. Because they gave up on the Game Gear, they never made another handheld ever. The Saturn was $600 when it came out. They had Virtua Fighter, which was kind of the first 3D arcade fighting game in the arena. They had a game called Astal, which was like a 2D platformer. Capcom was putting a lot of their 2D fighters more on the Saturn because it ran better than the PlayStation. So you had Darksiders, Marvel versus Capcom. You have the Marvel fighting game where you play like Wolverine versus Spider-Man, Guardian Heroes. They had some FMV role-playing games, just like really weird stuff for that system.
It was one of those that I think they finally were kind of catching up, like, consoles to arcade games.
Yeah.
I remember, like, in Japan only, they had, like, the Dungeons & Dragons arcade game, when I played that in the arcade for the first time, it was, oh, my God, that was the game right there, being, like, a Final Fight fan.
Yeah.
And a total nerd with Dungeons & Dragons. So, but, yeah, it was one of those that finally catch up to arcades, so that they were able to do so much more with it, but... You know, again, it's also kind of one of those things that they were almost like too innovative.
Yeah, they also had Panzer Dragoon.
Oh yeah, oh man, that I know everyone loves that game, but like for me, I could not play that game to save my life.
I've never seen a physical copy of it.
I had one actually. I wish I knew what happened to my Saturn, but between me and my brother, Captain Chris, who I don't know if you had on your show, but
no,
he's all
yet.
Over our network here. But yeah, we somehow acquired a Sega Saturn sometime after the release. I think it was probably about 2 years maybe afterwards, something like that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, Panzer Dragoon was one of the games that we had. And
it's expensive.
Yes, buying that new, yeah, it was, like, super, super expensive. Like, I think we might have got, like, at a garage sale or something, like, super cheap.
If you still got that copy, people will pay up to $2,000 and up to get that original print.
I wish I knew what happened to it. But, yeah, it's one of those that just kind of disappeared into our lives, basically, or out of our lives. Because, yeah, I remember having it, playing it, couldn't figure out what in the hell I was doing. And yeah, it just kind of disappeared one day.
And it was weird because the Sega Saturn was kind of like a smaller version of the Xbox. If you look at it, if you look at the design, you could probably look at pictures of it online. They had also Nights into Dreams where, they brought a different kind of this round controller. It was very weird. I tried playing it and I could not get into it. That controller was just odd.
That controller, yeah, I remember seeing the controller. I remember kind of messing around with it and not figuring out what to do with it. Nights of the Dreams was definitely one of those games that I know a lot of people really got into.
Yeah.
It was kind of a weird, unique take on like almost a 3D platformer, but you were still kind of controlling it on like a 2D plane. Yeah, it was kind of an interesting experiment, I think.
I know they did Castlevania Symphony of the Night. They did bring that to the Sega Saturn.
That's right. Oh, God, I love that one.
But that one was actually like lower quality, but they added the girl to be as one of the players, and she's tonight had a tiger or a dove as the attack.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, she was just able to like use, I think, just a kind of like a little variety of magic, I think, that just kind of somehow centered all around animals.
I know they were supposed to do a 3D Castlevania on the Sega Saturn, but it ended up getting canceled.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That didn't really.
Yeah, you can find that online. And then Japan just got so much weird stuff, like literally just completely weird stuff. I think it was PlayStation. They had like a gay erotica kind of game. And the first boss you fight is this kind of Japanese man with a big cow piece. And where his junk would come at to attack you would be a muscle man with his hands crossed, wiggling, trying to hit you and stuff. So when you hit it with your, you can look it up. I forgot the name of it. You're going to be like, what in the world is this? I think it came out for Sega Saturn, but I'm not sure. I think it came out for PlayStation. It only came out in Japan, but it's very weird. But I think it came out for Sega Saturn.
Oh, man. Yeah, that one I didn't hear about. But yeah, I know Japan, I did hear they got quite a variety of just kind of like weird out there stuff. I think almost probably double what it actually even ended up getting into the U.S.
Yeah. I think House of the Dead came out for the Sega Saturn too.
Yeah, it did actually. Yeah. I've got the Wikipedia up on my tablet over here, and yeah, I was actually just looking at House of the Dead, Virtual Fighter 2, and Sega Rally Championship.
Oh yeah, that one was good.
Yeah, that was that was one of the only ones I had, actually. And yeah, it was actually, I was not a big racing game fan, but that is one of those that I really enjoyed, though.
What else came out for that system that was popular?
Let's see here. Tomb Raider, actually. Let's see here. Oh, nope. Actually, yeah, it was originally made for the Sega Saturn. But I guess just they kind of pulled out at the last minute because, the Saturn sales were kind of tanking at that point.
Yeah. And then after that, we get the Sega Dreamcast.
Yes, which, I was a big fan of the Dreamcast. I had that one shortly after the release. I remember some of my friends had it. And that was kind of also the first ones I kind of started delving into more of the online aspect of it, especially with, like, a Phantasy Star Online.
Oh, yeah. That was huge for that system.
Oh, yeah. I think there's even, from what I hear, you can hack it. And there are still people that have Phantasy Star Online servers available. And I know they did like a Phantasy Star Online 2, which I think is only available in Japan, but I know there is ways of getting on that in the U.S. But yeah, I think there's still people that somehow hacked it and have original servers up and running for it.
Which was weird because they have Microsoft Windows in the Dreamcast.
That was something else that was really weird. Not in any sort of aspect that you could like say use Windows per se, but
yeah,
I remember that was one of their big things was that we're basically a computer now, we have Windows on our system.
Yeah, but I didn't know, was that for that online was with Windows? Because I know when you put a game in with the Dreamcast, the orange swirl would come out and then like Dreamcast would pop up like a little ball would drop on it, and then it, like with the swirl coming, they'll say Dreamcast. Like, was that, where did the Windows part come in?
It was Windows CE, which I know was more meant for like some of the really early like portable stuff.
Yes.
So I'm trying to think, because I think it was mainly for kind of like their opening menu, so kind of go between like your music player and stuff like that. But
okay.
I think you're right. Like once it starts going online, I think it started using a lot of the earlier, like Windows technology for that, like something like earlier version of like Internet Explorer.
Okay. Did you do anything with your VMU?
Oh man. Oh geez. I used to do a lot with it. I remember there was a lot of different games and stuff that you could get for it. I'm trying to remember now off the top of my head because it's I still have my Dreamcast and I still have my VMUs, but unfortunately, like the actual visual part of it, they stopped working. But the memory cards still work in the system.
Okay,
but yeah, I couldn't get the screen to work anymore. But yeah, I remember there was a bunch of stuff that had all kinds of random games for.
Well, I know Sonic Adventure, you could raise the little animals up like they were Tamagotchis.
That's right. Yeah, the Chows, I think, or the KOs, or yeah. I don't remember how exactly they pronounced it.
Yeah, Sound Adventure was fun on the Dreamcast.
That was really good, actually. It's definitely kind of their first realm into 3D gaming, I think, when it came to Sonic, and it was pretty glitchy. I remember being. But you know what? I mean, overall, it was still a lot of fun. Still good to play.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very satisfying getting, all the Chaos Emeralds for everybody and then playing the last part where you could be, like, Super Sonic. If you're a Sonic fan, it was definitely a fantastic game.
Did you play, because I know House of the Dead 2 came out for it. There was Die Hard.
Oh, that's right, the Die Hard arcade game. I don't think I ever played it on the Dreamcast. I did play a lot of it in the arcade because that was when I first saw it. It's definitely one of those that I'm actually kind of on the lookout for my Dreamcast. Because, Die Hard arcade was great.
I will have to snag you next year if you care to go to Wisconsin. They have the Midwest Gaming Classics there.
Oh yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, I went 1 year completely fine. So if you're down for it, we could get a hotel. Because I think the hotel, I gotta see if they moved it or whatever. But the hotel that we stayed at was hosting the the expo. It was really fun, and I've been missing it almost every year since that. But I do want to go next year. So if you down for it, I'll talk to Justin and them and see if people are down for it. And probably podcast in our room and talk about the stuff that we got, because I really need to get some classic games.
Yeah, I'm down. That sounds awesome.
They had the Dawn of the Dead. They had a House of the Dead beat 'em up game.
House of the Dead beat 'em up game.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing that one.
Yeah.
I remember one of the House of the Deads. I think House of the Dead 2, I think, ended up making it on the Dreamcast. But yeah, it did.
Yeah, House of the Dead 2 did. Typing of the Dead did. Skies of Arcadia.
Oh yeah, that was, oh man, I had a copy of that and that one disappeared on me, but me that was one that I really wanted to play.
It's a good game, but when you get to the ship battles, it's kind of like, what am I doing? Like, I was getting my tail whooped. And, like, they had some weird things, but the Dreamcast, I believe it had 4 ports for it. They had Soul Calibur, which was the selling point of that system. They also had Street Fighter Third Strike. They had Street Fighter 1, Street Fighter 3. They had Street Fighter Alpha 3 come to it, and I believe Street Fighter 3, 1 and 2, but they also had, but Third Strike was the predominant one on there. I remember buying that game, and it was really like the arcade. It was a exact arcade port.
Oh, yeah. It was, it was exactly that. What was the other big one I was going to put out there? Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Honestly, I think that's actually, like, the better home console release of that game was on Dreamcast.
Yes. Yes, I do agree. I just didn't. Yeah. For some reason, I didn't get into Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and I should have brought it so I could learn more about it.
It's. I mean, yeah, because it was very much like the Street Fighter and some of the earlier Marvel fighting games that they did. Only everything was just turned up to 11 on that one. Giant cast of characters. It got crazy fast, and it was always something I really liked about it.
And then the weirdest thing out of the blue happened. The latest issue of EGM comes out, and it is announced that Sega has abandoned console and has went third party.
Yeah, it was almost kind of like the white flag to Nintendo at that point. But, you know, at that point, too, PlayStation had come out, and... You know, it was almost kind of like at that time there was only room for two, and I think it with the Dreamcast, I heard at that point they had already learned how to hack and get around that. So essentially, you could just download any game that you wanted for it. So I know a couple of sales are hurting from there.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It was like some gold kind of disc. They were saying some kind of readable disc. You could burn them and it would read the system would read it, like it was a Dreamcast disc.
It was like a boot disc for it. Because I think even at the time, even to get Nintendo or PlayStation to do that, it required actually soldering in a new chip to do that.
Yes.
And at Dreamcast, you could basically just do it right off the bat there. And then I also think that one of the other complaints I've heard about it, I didn't really mind it, but I think a lot of the games that they had were more arcade ports. And I think more people were saying, well, I'll just go to the arcade to play these games.
Right. When it came to them announcing third party, they sided more with Nintendo. So they put out Sonic Adventures and Sonic Adventure 2, and Sega was making more money off of Nintendo platforms.
You know, it's kind of funny because I think one of the big things is that like Nintendo and PlayStation, I mean, even like nowadays, like Microsoft, like, you know, it's the money's not in the consoles, it's in the games. And
yes,
if you can't sell the games, you know, it's or, you know, basically if you can't sell the games, you know, you almost don't even need to make your own system anymore.
Well, that's why Nintendo still makes money off their games and their systems. Like, and we talked about this in earlier podcasts that, you know, the 360 was losing money. Sony was losing money. Sony didn't actually get in the black for the PlayStation 3 to almost 2012.
Yeah, it's kind of unique how gaming works. I mean, even back then and, you know, even going up to today. Yeah, I think it's why basically there is, you know, so much more licensing and, you know, why, you know, Sega decided to really kind of side with Nintendo. I mean, it was almost like, hey, you know, you know, you win. Let's join forces and make a whole boatload of money.
Yeah. Shenmue for the Dreamcast was one of their most expensive games, and that really hurt Sega. And Shenmue 2 came out for Xbox 360, and that did okay. And now we got Shenmue 3, which met its Kickstarter, which a lot of people were excited about, and it's coming out for PlayStation 4. But yeah, Shenmue for Dreamcast was a major disappointment. Even though it did open world, it was very minimal with tasks. Then they also brought out Jet Set Radio, which led to the cel-shading art style of video games. Nintendo was able to adapt to that cel-shading and bring us The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker.
Oh man, yeah, and yeah, Jet Set's definitely one of those that I know is one of those everybody loves, but yeah, it's one of those I just could not get behind. But yeah, just the art style on that. I mean, I'm one of the few people that really do like the cell shading, you know, outside Jet Set. I mean, for me, you know, being a big Borderlands fan,
yeah,
used a lot of that sort of art style too. But you know, it's definitely a very unique style. It's very what's the word I'm looking for? It's a smart way of doing graphics because it looks fantastic.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, performance-wise on a system, it's very easy for the system to run that. So you can make so much bigger game by going that route.
Right. So that's our... Anything else about Sega, Ryan, that you would like to add?
You know, I think there's no one who covered pretty well on there. I think the only thing we haven't talked about at all was the whole Sega TV where they tried.
Oh yeah, so Sega Genesis was where Sega was trying to go online with the system, and I think it had to do with dial up or something. I don't know the full details. It's been long, but they brought like the Mega Man collection of Mega Man 1 to 3 on the Sega TV.
It was almost kind of like an early attempt to actually streaming games. Because I remember, Comcast. I know back in the day around here was was Jones Cable,
uh-huh.
And I remember, you know, they were trying to sell that for a while, where you can get that as like an add-on. And I want to say it was like $20 to $30 on top of your cable bill. And ooh. I remember trying to convince my parents that was a great deal, but they weren't buying it. And something tells me that there was probably a lot of other parents that kind of said the same thing.
Yeah.
Because, that died down pretty quickly as well.
Do you remember X-Band?
Oh, man. Vaguely. I remember the name.
And and the accessory where it was a ring that you used to do like Kung Fu moves in. It was supposed to read your moves.
Yes, yeah, it was like kind of almost their answer to Nintendo's Power Glove.
Yeah,
that's right. I had forgot about that. I remember that. Oh,
before you go on, did you ever hear that the Power Glove was made out of NASA technology?
I did not hear about that.
Yes, they have an ad for the Power Glove. It was originally designed by NASA.
Oh man. I guess it would kind of make sense, though, now that, because I actually had one. It was one of those, you know, garage sale finds that it had. It definitely felt like kind of, like the rubber on it almost felt like, not like how would you expect it to feel.
Yeah. I need to go garage selling. I've never been to a garage sale, and I want to go to one.
You know, it's amazing what sort of random things you could find. I mean, I remember, you know, one of my big buys at a garage sale, I was at some one random one, kind of like a, you know, higher end neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And they had a box. They had the original Sega Genesis box, the system, handful of games, two controllers, and they wanted to sell that for $5. And I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm passing this up. So I buy it. I take it home. I open up that the original Sega Genesis box just because I assumed it was for the system that was in the existing box that it was all came in. And inside was another two games, two controllers, and like the older style of Sega Genesis in it, like with the headphone jack and the volume control on it. Best buy I've ever found in my entire life at a garage sale.
Oh, and for people who didn't know before we got to HDMI and AV cords, we actually had the screw in the UFC, I think that was, or the UF or UH. We had the screw in toward the back of our TVs and then plug in the back part of our into our consoles.
That's right. It was a little box basically to the trick it into thinking it was like coming from like the antenna on top of your house.
Yeah.
Which for our younger listeners, basically that's what a satellite dish's grandfather is. It's basically an antenna on top of your roof.
Oh wow, I did not think of that. You're right. You're right. You are so right. So that's a little bit history of Sega. And of course you got them bringing the Yakuza series to the PlayStation brand, Sonic Boom, even though that's a bad game, people still love Sonic, still support it, even Sonic Fighters people liked and stuff. I know the Sega Sonic Racers or Sega All-Star Classics, Sega Sonic Racing, like transformation, like the Sega Racing game when he was at Cars, they said that one was really good.
I love that game.
And actually, Sonic is the mascot for Sega. You know, and Sega actually had different intros. So if you got the Sega, Master System, you'll hear a and say Sega all in blue. Sega Genesis would still do the same thing. Sonic had Sega when the Sega logo came on, so they did like a little jingle thing. I really don't know much about Saturn and the Dreamcast. Like I said earlier, kind of have like this little cool melody, and then you see the circle spin, but it sounded like water was dropping.
Yeah, it was a little different for that. I think some of the games themselves, they're the ones who started, or basically kept going with the whole Sega jingle tradition.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it by Sega. You know, going down memory lanes about them. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the TurboGrafx, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back. And we are back to talk about the TurboGrafx 16, giving you a little Caribbean dance moves from Bunk's Adventure. I love Bunk's Adventure. I had actually, that was my first TurboGrafx game for that system. Of course, the TurboGrafx was from NEC. It was a Hue card. That was the name of their chip, credit card looking kind of use of for the gaming. Later on, they added the TurboGrafx CD, and actually it's called TurboGrafx 16. It was supposed to be 16-bit, but it was pretty much like a higher res of 8-bit, like almost 8-12-bit. And it was it came around the time of the Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo. So it didn't survive long, but it had a ton of great games, like Vigilante, which was an IRM game. That was kind of, if you play Kung Fu for the NES, Vigilante was just like that, where you had two attacks. You could punch or you could kick. You could press up the jump, and if you press like number two, you were able to do a drop kick. Now, what made TurboGrafx different was that the buttons, it was only two buttons that was Roman numeral. So you would have one and then you would have two. I think you kind of had a directional pad for it. I forgot how that one actually looked, but the controllers came with rapid power. So, it had three clicks, so you was able to click all the way if you want to do rapid punch on, you know, or for button one, or do a rapid kick if you lift it all the way up for number two. So depending on, just using that for a Venture Dancy, for example, they had Keith Courage in the Alpha Zone, which was the game that the sister came for. They had Fighting Streets, which was Capcom's version of Street Fighter. Someone else produced it, but they had to change the name to Fighting Streets. With the Sega CD, with the TurboGrafx CD, they actually had Sherlock Holmes and Dracula X, which was Castlevania for the TurboGrafx 16.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, TurboGrafx is one of those, actually, I have not used at all, actually. And I actually had to kind of remind myself, I had to do a little research earlier today, kind of going on Wikipedia, just try to remember what the heck this thing even looked like.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I forgot what I was going to say.
With the TurboGrafx 16, it came with two controller ports. One controller was for you, cause this is when systems started coming with one controller. What's the TurboGrafx 16? Because it came with one controller, Keith Courage in the Alpha Zone, and the system in the quartz. And then later on, if you wanted to add the TurboGrafx CD, you can. They also brought out the TurboGrafx handheld, and you might have it on your Wikipedia, Ryan, what the name it was. But you can also use it as a TV turner to watch football games or anything like that.
Right, yeah, actually, I'm looking here. The Turbo Express is what
that's what it was. Yeah, and with the Turbo Express, which was cool, you could the games that you bought for the TurboGrafx 16 was the card that you could use in a Turbo Express, so you didn't have to buy extra games. You was able to play the games at home on the go with the Turbo Express.
That's right, yeah, and actually it was as a matter of fact, going back to the Sega Nomad, looks like it was something that was, the Nomad was released, but it was only actually supported for 2 years, which actually, really? The neat part about was that it actually used Sega Genesis cartridges, similar to like what the Turbo Express did, only the Turbo Express was doing that 5 years before the Nomad even hit the streets.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember hearing something about the Nomad, but I just never seen it in stores. Because they had like the Sega Genesis 2, like the Genesis 2, because it was like a smaller version. Because they took out the handheld, the headphone port and stuff, and they just made it smaller.
That's right, yeah, and they did that, and I seem to remember seeing like commercials and stuff for the Nomad. But I, yeah, you're right. I don't remember ever seeing it like in stores or anything like that. I mean, yeah, according to Wikipedia, it's only been out for 2 years. So it's in all my, you know, vintage video game searching, I can't think if I've ever actually seen one in person. But then again, yeah, even with like the Turbo Express, I don't think I've ever even seen one of those either.
Me neither. I had my Game Boy Color, so I was good. I had a Turbo Graphics. Somehow I tripped over a wire and it broke, and like it stopped working, and which sucked. But I was able to play like Splatterhouse, Axe Vengeance or something like that. Bunk 1 and 2, Vigilante. There was a I think it's called Dungeon Keeper or something like that. Dungeon Keeper. I didn't really have much. Also, before we go on more with the TurboGrafx, the Sega Saturn had these big jewel cases with white and light gray stripes on the side of it. And then it'll say like Saturn, which had a blue world and it had an S on it. The Sega Dreamcast went back to the smaller jewel cases, and they were black with Dreamcast on the side with the orange swirl on them.
And I remember as a collector, when it came to some of those the Saturn games, I remember that it was just such a pain because, I mean, they were so much bigger than anything else that was out there.
Well, the PlayStation had the big cardboard cases before they went into the glass cases, and then before they went to the CD format. Remember? Because they had like Konami did End of Zone, which was like Run a Gun, the Run a Gun game from the arcade.
You know, I forgot about that. Yeah, some of the earlier PlayStation ones were that big too.
So Shinden was in that big cardboard case. Resident Evil was in the big cardboard case.
Yeah, and I think they all kind of wised up, like thinking, like, all right, these things are. I mean, you know, what else media wise at the time did you have that was that big? I mean, even like VHS cassettes were. You know,
you had Neo Geo. Neo Geo had big cases, which we'll talk about after TurboGrafx. And pretty much that's a little bit it. They did another TurboGrafx in Japan that never came to America, and they had like 6 games, and then they stopped. And I know some of their games are very collector. Chris Kohler from Wired, I think he has the whole collection or he's looking for one, but you could look up Wired or and see his history with the TurboGrafx, like the second one that came out in Japan. But yeah, that's pretty much it had multi-tap for up to 4 players. No, yeah, for 4 players, so you can actually have 5 players on screen. This is where Ease came from, not the multi-tap, but Ease, which is, I actually thought it was YS, because it was like Y apostrophe S, and I didn't know that it was called Ease. I used to call it YS and YS12.
Yeah, I think if you were outside Japan, I don't think you actually knew what the correct pronunciation of that was, because I think I would just called it YS or YS, because yeah, who knew, you know?
Right. Bunk had a shoot 'em up game, and I think like Thunder Force was like Bunk Thunder, or I think Thunder Force was like on it. Bunk was kind of the mascot for the TurboGrafx 16. And anyone who looks at Leapfrog cases, the little cardboard one, that's what, kind of a little bit smaller, but that's what TurboGrafx 16 games used to come in. And at the bottom it says like Q car, and it was H. It was a capital H, small U, capital C, A R D.
That's right. Yeah, I'm trying to think if I even. I know I've seen the cartridges around, but yeah, I can't even think if I even seen like some of those original cases for them.
They had Ninja Spirit, which was like a really fun arcade game. They had the Bruce Lee looking game. It looks terrible. And because the sprites were very big, it like took up the whole screen.
Yeah, I think it was one of those systems that, in the U.S., it couldn't compete with the rest of them. And I think a lot of those games, Just kind of flipping through here. I think they were able to find some sort of iteration in some of the other systems, like Bonk. I know there's a couple of those that end up going on the NES. Adventure Island. I know some of those, earlier version of those.
Yeah, Huston was a big supporter of TurboGrafx because they have Bomberman on it. Which reminds me, I'm sorry, everybody. Bomberman for the Sega Genesis had 16-player, which is amazing. I love Bomberman for the Sega Genesis.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. It was like one of the first ones that were able to do that many players.
Yeah. I don't know how they did it, but they did. But yeah, that's pretty much all I got for TurboGrafx. Not too long because it was only around maybe 2 or 3 years.
Something like that. Yeah, it was not long for in the U.S. Of course, Japan. Japan's got room for 1,000 different consoles over there, and I know they were putting up stuff almost till the turn of the century almost.
Yeah, pretty much. So anything? Oh, and you don't know much about TurboGrafx, so.
No, I think we basically ran through my entire knowledge of it
here. Yeah, and kind of that was some of the games that I had. But it was a fun system. I really like it. I really like the fact that they add the rapid power for the controller if you wanted to use it for games, because it made like shoot 'em up games very easier to do.
Yeah, it was one of the first ones that the actual like first party actually did like turbo version of their controllers, and I think Sega Genesis later on did some of that too.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which came first, but yeah, because it's something I don't think you really saw outside of those two really for first party stuff.
Yep. So we're going to take another break, and we're going to talk about Neo Geo as the best ability that we can. So we will be right back. Talking about Neo Geo, and the music that you heard was from Fatal Fury. Fatal Frame, just like, which is a game that's coming out this Thursday for Wii U. Can't wait to get that for next week. But the Neo Geo was a system where you could play games at the arcade and at the home. It had a card base. Like a memory card thing that you could bring to the arcade and insert your stats. Now, just stay with me. The Neo Geo at the time it came out was $600. The cartridges were $200. Because the cartridges were the exact same copies of the arcade. The arcade machines of the Neo Geo had 4 games in them. It had 2 players. Thank you for that notice. It had 2 players, and each player had 4 buttons, A, B, C, D. And they, at the arcade, they were colored like blue, yellow, green, red. And in the middle with the select button, it was white. All you had to do was put in, depending on what, though, how they set up the system, was put 25 cent in, select the game that you wanted to play, and play it. If you had the memory card, it would save the data, and you could go home and transfer that data to the Neo Geo. Later on, Neo Geo started doing like the Wanda Swan, and then after that, they brought in the Neo Geo CD, which was about $200 to $300, and the games started being like $50. They were a little bit cheaper. They were still arcade ports, but they had a lot of loading screen on it. SNK ended up buying out Neo Geo, so that's why you see a lot of games say like SNK Play More. SNK was Neo Geo. I'm sorry about that. Playmore, I think, brought them out. And that's why you see, like, a lot of games say, like, Playmore on it. But SNK was, I think they were the makers of the Neo Geo.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, now I'm just kind of flipping through the Wikipedia here myself. The arcade cabinets, I remember were fantastic for arcades back when. The console, you had to be like one of the three richest kings of Europe to be able to afford one of those bad boys.
Right. And the thing with the SNK was, the controller, the system was black. The controller was like gold and black. I think, all 4 buttons were black. They weren't, rainbow colored like the arcade version was.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at the arcade version. Yeah. They're all. The one I'm looking at here, it's basically an arcade stick, with the 4 gray buttons instead of the colored ones.
Wasn't like 128 bit or 128 meg or something like that. They was doing by megabytes instead of bit, but the way that you look at it, it was just like, well, there is an arcade, so it couldn't be like you would think like 32 bit or maybe 64 bit.
According to Wikipedia, the whole system was marketed as like a 24-bit, but technically what it is, it's actually a 16-bit, but it had a 18-bit or a 8-bit coprocessor in it.
Okay.
So they were kind of saying, oh, yeah, let's put the two together, you got 24-bit. Right. So it's kind of playing on the whole, the
number games.
I think they kind of do some of that a little bit. Nowadays, even.
Yeah. It did a lot of sprite-based games. You didn't really get a lot of anime-looking games. It was a big component for fighters. It still has World Heroes, Fatal Fury, King of Fighters is still going on. It's one of their biggest fighters games. Japan has a lot of fighters. A lot of people recognize Neo Geo for the Metal Slug series. I believe Metal Slug 7 was the last game that came out for the DS. And Metal Slug 2 or 3 or Metal Slug X is held as one of the best Metal Slug games on it. And that game is kind of a Contra-style game. You could do 2-player, which is weird that when you get a power-up, you're limited to certain bullets. You get more points when you save survivors in Metal Slug. And there is, I think, Metal Slug X, that if a zombie pukes on you or gets you, you'll turn into one of them and just like you'll start moving slow, but you can shoot the zombies and still until they end up binding you again and killing you. And you'll like your bones will turn, you'll see your bones fall out. You can also, if you eat too much, be fat, but you see your gun shoot bigger bullets.
Yeah, it definitely had a lot of those like unique, I guess you call them power ups. I mean, even just down to hopping in like the tank, and I think some of the later ones, I think you could hop in like the helicopter and do some flying around as well.
And you would hear the announcer be like, "Machine gun,
yeah,
homie,
right.
Missiles, flamethrower,
shotgun,
shotgun." Mission complete. It was really cool hearing that in the arcade. I know definitely with Fatal Fury, it was a 3-level game. And let me explain that a little bit better. So you would have the foreground, the middle ground, and the background, and you was able to switch around in those three grounds while during your fight. If your energy grew red, you was able to do a special attack move to save you and be able to beat your opponent or have them lose energy and stuff. It's very technical. You do have to spend time learning it. And that was kind of the thing with the Neo Geo. Each game that she played, they did a little tutorial on what buttons you would do, what they do, and how you would control them.
Yeah, some of those fighting games were very unique, and you know, some of the bigger rivals that they have was Street Fighter, and I think Street Fighter, while still, you know, maybe was a little easier, so I think there's probably more people that picked up that one. But yeah, if you're looking for a much more technical fighter, going anything on a Neo Geo is the way to go.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of Evo, which is like a fighter tournament. Besides like Guilty Gear, Zerd, and all of that other stuff, Neo Geo is still held as just like besides the Dreamcast, it was held as the system to go to for fighters. And they're still making a lot of fighting games for the system.
I think some of the, one of my favorite fighting games is actually Capcom versus SNK. And that's where basically they had a bunch of, like Street Fighter and Darksiders and even like Rival Schools and Project Justice versus like a bunch of guys from like Fatal Fury and Samurai Showdown, which is, you know,
yes, too. Samurai Showdown. Ryan, talk about Samurai Showdown.
Oh, man, I got to remember some of this now. So, yeah, essentially what it was is it was a fighting game that you were actually playing as samurais and different fighters from it. Mitsuguri, I remember, was like one of the main samurais to it.
Yes.
And I think he was actually based on somebody from history. I'm not great with Japanese history, unfortunately, so I couldn't tell you who. But, I mean, it, you know, had I remember a guy that was a knight. I mean, it's a couple people from a couple different countries. It basically their version of, well, I would refer to as like basically samurais to the Japanese.
Yes. And it's a weapon-based game. And there's times that if you both attack at the same each other, you'll get into a duel. And you have to press the button. And whoever was the strongest, the loser would lose their weapon. So they would be weaponless.
I had forgotten about that, actually, and kind of a unique little tidbit here. I actually read much later on somebody was, like, kind of reverse engineering the game and actually found out that, because it said, like, you know, tap the buttons quick to, you know, to do it, and whoever tapped more.
Yeah.
Actually, that meant nothing. It was always completely random who lost their weapon.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
Little Easter egg I picked up on just on my random internet exploration.
Yeah, and sometimes if you do one of their special moves, you would kind of kill them, like cut them in half or have blood coming out, depending on what player you had. So the one that I loved to do was he looked like a gremlin. He looked like Blanca. With Freddy Krueger nails, like his Freddy Krueger glove. And one of his special moves is that for a throw, he would drill into you. And he would like, yeah. And he would drill into you. Or you were able to do like a roll attack, but you would be like in a circle.
That's right, yeah. Kind of like spin like on the ground or something like that.
You would have a ninja in the back with a flag lifting up of who won and other points. And there was also food thrown in. So whoever got the food was able to regain health.
That's right, yeah. Which was, you know, one of the only fighting games that really did that. Well, I take it back. there's Primal Rage, where it was basically just like dinosaurs fighting. I can't remember what systems that even ended up on.
That ended up on, that was actually that was Atari. It ended up on the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis and 3DO.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's where, yeah, because that's where I played it there. Yeah, or basically you could like knock a, you know, you're basically giant dinosaurs, so you could like knock humans into the battleground and grab them up and eat them for extra health.
Yeah.
But getting a little topic there. But yeah, it's yeah, one of the only fighting games where they really had an opportunity for you to regain your health at that time.
Yeah. They had some puzzle games. They had top down games like with airplanes, and I think they had from IRM. It was a shoot 'em up that came out for Nintendo, and I cannot think of Akira Warriors.
Oh yeah, that was was that Neo Geo?
Yeah,
I remember playing that one. Yeah, I remember the arcade versions of those. Yeah, your controller, the joystick actually would turn for you to point the direction to your player, so you could essentially, you know, control where you're shooting and where you're moving independently. And I think, yeah, one of the few games that actually let you do that.
Yeah. And they brought some of their games to the Super Nintendo, and I think Sega Genesis. And I think Sega CD got, like, Samurai Showdown. I know 3DO also got Samurai Showdown. Super Nintendo was the only one that got Fatal Fury. And maybe the Sega Genesis, but I know the Super Nintendo got it. So, yeah, I mean, if you could find the original Geo, Neo Geo for cheap, snag it up with some good games. You won't be disappointed. That was the first kind of bringing an arcade to the home, but $600. And I don't even know what the second controller cost. All I know was that the games were $200 and the system was $600. And I actually seen one at our electronic boutique here in Waukegan, Illinois.
Oh man.
Lakehurst Mall had it.
Oh, that's right. Oh, good old Lakehurst.
Oh, that's another discussion. That's for the Geek Podcast. The Deluded. I keep waiting to say delusional, but it's the Deluded Geek.
Hey, sometimes we're delusional. You know, it's I guess it's not completely wrong, right?
Well, that is true. That is true. So when we come back, we're going to get into arcades. Anything about the Neo Geo, Ryan?
Nothing else I can think of. Yeah, that's really about it.
Okay. So we'll be covering the arcade when we come back. For the last segment, where we're talking about arcades. So, Ryan, arcades. How long have you been in arcades? Like,
you know,
go ahead.
I you know, it's back in the day, I was as much of an arcade monkey as I possibly could. I mean, anytime I can convince my parents to take me to an arcade when I was a kid, I was jumping on that. I mean, because for a long time, I mean, if you were looking to play like higher end games, you had to go to an arcade. I mean, because, you know, PC at that time couldn't, you know, PCs that were available then couldn't handle that sort of power. I mean, there was no console then that could handle that the way arcades could.
Those motherboards were different.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a completely different animal. And, you know, eventually they kind of got to the point where they could, you know, basically get those quality games at home. Right. But it really did take them a long time to get there.
Well, because us being retro, you know, kids, let's just say, I like being called retro kids, we probably play, I would say, maybe over 50 to 100 arcade games. And you know, Capcom and Konami, Nintendo used to do arcades, but then they, you know, kind of died out because they had their console business going on. Midway, which was Williams, which they also did pinball games in the arcades. SNK had the Neo Geo. You had a Claim bring out some games. Not much Activision. Activision wasn't around. You had Tecmo bring out games. And then you saw IRAM. Data East was a big one. Rare and Midway did Killer Instinct. So you kind of had different choices. Definitely for me, and I shout outs to Aladdin's Castle, you know, in memory. That was my arcade at Lakers. And the dollar, that $1 that gave me those four tokens with the little genie on the coin in the back was like was my second home.
Oh, man. Yeah, oh, Aladdin's Castle. Oh, I miss that so much. Yeah, and even they had a... yeah, because remember Aladdin's Castle was owned, I believe it was a Namco company, and I think they even owned the one arcade that opened up, I think, downstairs.
Yeah, Namco had downstairs. I don't think Namco had owned Aladdin's Castle. I don't think so.
Maybe. I remember it was one of the big ones that, at the time that had it.
Right. Because, see, Namco had the silver coins with Pac-Man on the back, and then Namco on the other side.
Yeah, maybe you're right. So, yeah, I don't remember which one owned it at the time. I know they're all owned by some of the bigger ones. I mean, the only ones I know that are still around, I think out in Northbrook, there's a Nickel City, and that's a Capcom one.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't heard of Galloping Ghost?
You know, I've heard of that one. I've not been to it yet,
though. Oh, I have to kidnap you and take you there.
Yeah, do it.
It's $15, and it's all free video games all day long.
Yes.
So.
Oh, I could do that.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to kidnap you and Chris and Justin and probably Jonathan if you survive. We can hop in my car, and it's in Brookfield.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I just remember the one out in Northbrook, and Nickel City is a great one because it's one of those where it's like $2 to get in.
Yeah,
yeah, and everything's runs on like 1 to 5 nickels.
Yeah, and then you got
free games in the bag.
In the bag, yeah, because that's where I play Street Fighter Third Strike.
Yeah,
ooh, I'm asking Justin. Sorry, everybody, for for the sidetracking. But when it comes to arcades, like. Yeah, because I think they had the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, do you remember playing Turtles in Time where you was able to throw the foot soldiers out of the screen, like swinging them? That was amazing to me.
Yeah, I remember it because I actually owned that game on Super Nintendo.
I did too, yeah.
But I mean, it really wasn't the same as going to the arcade and, you know, throwing a few quarters in the machine and maybe like just a, you know, somebody you've never even met or, you know, for Turtles in Time, you know, the three other people that you might not have even met before all right. kind of teaming up. You know, it's arcades have a special feeling that, you know, I don't really think gaming, like even nowadays, like, you know, random people you play online, you know, it's not the same feeling as like standing right next to somebody and you know, dumping quarters into a game and getting through it.
Right. It's that social aspect that arcades had, you know, kids playing with adults or kids playing with other kids, adults playing with teenagers, like vice versa. Like there was some kind, there was always respect of when you lost a fighting game and it was your first time playing, you had a feeling of, okay, if I study this game and, you know, I'm going to lose money, but I would rather spend $20 learning this game so I could fight against my opponents. Because I was captured by Killer Instinct, seeing how fast combos and stuff. It was like something that I never seen in a video game. I love Double Dragon 2, you know, well, actually Double Dragon, because the buttons were reversed, you know. Definitely with Double Dragon 2, depending on what side that you was facing, the punch and the kick button would be reversed, would switch back and forth. We talked about Moonwalker. It was a three-player game by Sega, and you didn't kick. You just had these magical powers, like laser kind of powers for like your melee attack, and you still save kids and stuff. But it was like on a diagonal, like a I don't know what they call them. It's like a diagonal board. It was on
almost kind of like a what do they call that, like kind of like a Diablo type viewpoint.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was so good. It even kind of where the Sega game of Moonwalker kind of more went to like the smooth criminal part. I seem to remember the arcade version went like later. Like, I don't know if you know how many people here have actually seen the Moonwalker movie and actually seen, you know, the entire thing and not just like the smooth criminal part.
I've seen the whole thing.
Yeah. So you see, there's actually a part where Michael Jackson turns into a robot and then basically turns into a car and like drives away.
Yeah.
And the game actually like explored like that whole other part. And it was a multiplayer game, and you basically have like three Michael Jacksons on the screen at the same time. And I remember just losing my shit on that one.
Did you, if you played Michael Jackson Moonwalker for, this Genesis, you had a blue energy bar. And if you hold the A button, Michael Jackson would spin. So depending on the enemies that would come on, Michael Jackson would stop. And all the enemies and Michael Jackson would dance, would do like a routine dance number to the song, and then the enemies would die, and you would be able to continue on. And you got more energy when you saved the girls.
It was so good. I mean, even, you know, like, you know, dogs running after you, and the dogs would get up and dance too.
Yeah,
like
they on their two hands, like, arf, arf. I'm like, what the world?
It's ridiculous and awesome at the same time.
Yeah, I just hated finding those kids and bushes and caves, and I hated all that crap. But still a good game. Like I said, Arthur Beast Kid Nick Guy was one of my favorite Data East games. Bad Dudes by Data East. We talked about the Combat Tribes.
Oh yeah, Combat Tribes.
Okay, let's get into the Combat Tribes. me and Ryan loves that game, or I'm assuming you love that game or accepted of that game. And I find that game cheap and terrible because you have to pay more tokens to get your energy back.
Yeah, it's a, you know, I wouldn't say I love the game, but like I remember my brother got really into that game, and he kind of almost forced me to play a lot of it because it was one of those that they got ported to Super Nintendo.
Yes.
It actually had kind of like a versus mode.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a, yeah, because I remember, I think we were talking about that, where like the hitboxes were really kind of messed up on that one.
Yeah.
It was really kind of almost like a broken game, where I think they were trying to kind of compete with some of the other type of games out there.
Well, it was Technos who made the Double Dragon games. Because don't forget, Double Dragon 3 and Combat Tribes was almost the same game, because they had the same energy bar.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. Now it's coming back to me. It's been a long time since I played that one, so it's a So I don't know. Is that almost meant to be like kind of a spiritual successor or like a?
It was just something that Technos was known for. They were known for making these kind of hard games, but you know they didn't have the best programming. Because of the hit detection was wrong. Because when Double Dragon came out to the NES, it was different than the arcade version. But when it came out to the Sega Master System, they ported it, even though it was a lesser graphical style, pretty much almost everything for the Master System was the arcade version of it. Because you have five boxes for energy, you can play two player Billy or Jimmy Lee, and you didn't have to get the hearts like the Super Nintendo version. Super Nintendo, you had one player, you had the heart level up system that you could cheat on the second level, with the getting the bat and hitting the hidden enemy on the thing till your hearts got all the way up, and it was just completely different. It was a different game than the arcade version.
You know, I seem to remember that too, because I think it was one of those where I had it on computer back in the day, on PC. And yeah, because I remember playing that one, the one on Nintendo, and the arcade, and all three of them were completely different games, pretty much.
Yes. I Double Dragon 2 for NES was better than us than the arcade version. I liked Double Dragon 2. For NES. I mean, I like the arcade version, but I was getting tired of and they have that at Galloping Ghost.
Ooh. I don't think I've ever played the second Double Dragon.
Yeah, they have it there. That's where you had all the Neo Geo games at the arcade, so like Metal Slug, Fatal Fury, World Heroes. You also had, of course, Ski Ball, depending on where you went, or you could get like the pulley where you could grab a plush toy or a certain thing and win tickets. But it was mostly the arcade games. EA did Battletoads for arcade, which never came to consoles. No, I think it's on Rare Replay. It's on Rare Replay.
Yeah, they put it on Rare Replay.
Yeah. Which was...
Yeah, go ahead. Right, go ahead. Yeah, you go first.
It was funny to see a three-player Battletoads at the arcade, even though the game was two-player on the NES.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because I forgot they did that, too. Because I think originally they wanted to make it a three-player, but, you know, I think I remember reading something where they kind of gave up on the idea, because I remember with, like, the Nintendo, they had, a multi-tap, but I think there was only, like, one or two things that actually used it, and they didn't want to be number three. They didn't really see the point to it.
Now, R6 Flags had Time Killers and Bloodlines, which was like two garbage fighting games. And I won't get into them. You can look them up on YouTube. But this is where the rivalry of Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat came from. Now, Ryan, you could have a choice between Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat, and I'll take the opposite.
All right. I've always been more Street Fighter than Mortal Kombat, honestly. I mean, the new one's cool, but back in the day, Street Fighter had it.
Okay, continue. Go for it.
Oh, okay. yeah, I don't know. It just it seemed like a Street Fighter always played more smoothly. You know, I think Mortal Kombat felt more locked into what you were doing. Combos almost felt really kind of forced.
Yeah.
Where like Street Fighter, I feel even though maybe sometimes the game wasn't picking up the combos.
Yeah.
You were still, you know, you could still chain up stuff together. Where, yeah, it was like harder to, what's the word I'm looking for? It's overall smoother. Like, I always kind of compared Mortal Kombat, the old school Mortal Kombat, to kind of a broken shopping cart.
And everybody, with Mortal Kombat, and I'm going to talk about Mortal Kombat. It was one of the first digitized fighting games where people were surprised that the game had blood and just violence, and you was able to kill people. It won people over. That's how we ended up with Mortal Monday when it came out on Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis. Street Fighter 2 was more technical, where Mortal Kombat was basic. So you had a block button where with Street Fighter 2, you just hold back or diagonally down. With Mortal Kombat, you were able to uppercut enemies if they tried to jump kick you. If you timed it right, you was able to uppercut them high in the air and have a sound effect and see like all this blood come out. And it looked very cartoony, very fake. And it wasn't until Mortal Kombat 2 that you was able to do more. People loved the Pit from Mortal Kombat, but Mortal Kombat 2, the first stage you started on was you was like kind of in this castle with this green pool. So you was able to do a fatality where you would punch him into the green pool and a skeleton would come out and it would float, which was representing your body, being melted by the acid. You was able to also do that on the second level where you could punch your opponent, uppercut him in the air, and they would fall into spikes. If you held down, they was able to slide off. They did have another pit one where you were able to uppercut them and they would just fall on this flat brick. Someone tried to spread a rumor that you could uppercut your opponent into the forest trees and the trees would eat you.
Yeah, I think originally that was something that they were planning on doing, but the technical limitations of that didn't allow that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know Mortal Kombat 1 had Ermac when a guy would come out and say, Toasty, you would both have to do something, and Ermac would come out and you would fight him. He was a reptile. No, was Ermac a reptile? No, it was reptile.
You're thinking of Noob Saibot, because Ermac, originally what he was, I actually read about him too. He's if something like glitched out in the game or error, yeah. It was basically immediately supposed to go into like that mode where it was just like it was Ermac, who was basically just a different colored ninja.
Yeah,
that it basically was just a super difficult version to beat. You just basically was difficulty all the way up to kind of kick you out of the game.
Okay,
I think they compared it to like pinball games. If you shake the machine too much,
yeah,
they go tilt and then just locks down everything and ball falls and you lose, basically.
Yeah. I mean, Reptile was the first one. It was in part one. Because I think Ermac didn't come into, like, the second or third one.
I think he was in two. They originally brought him in. And then they later on made him, like, an actual character.
Yeah. Because Mortal Kombat 3, they had different versions of that one. They added a run button for you to do your... They started to call it dialing and combos. With Mortal Kombat 3, and they added new characters, Ermac, Smoke, Noob Saibot, for PlayStation and N64 that had Mortal Kombat Trilogy, which the PlayStation, I think the N64 was also buggy, but the PlayStation one had a bug in it where after a few matches, it was blue screen and said that it couldn't read the game anymore.
Yeah, I seem to remember the later on, like a lot of the Mortal Kombats they kind of went kind of weird directions. I think they were trying to cash in to some of the, the 3D fighters, trying to put some of those in. Meanwhile, on the Street Fighter side, they had a lot of repetition themselves, I have to admit. But at the same time, they were always improving on it. Like, this is, back before DLC or anything like that was even a thing.
Right.
So they basically just made new versions where, like Super Street Fighter, where they added, extra characters into that. So yeah, basically almost had like 20 versions of Street Fighter 2 before you even got to Street Fighter 3.
I wonder who hacked it for them to do like the turbo and do the special edition where they could do, because it's like Street Fighter Rainbow where you could be in the air and throw like keep spamming fireballs like in the air and do the hurricane kick, and like Capcom learned of it, and that's when they started implementing it in like in a legit game.
Yeah, it's because I remember, yeah, back in the day, like Game Genie on the console versions. I remember hearing about that. Like, that was one of the big things is, you know, oh, throw fireballs in the air, plays the same characters. And yeah, people were using those hacking devices.
Right.
Basically, just be able to do that. And Capcom, of course, picked up on that. I was like, yeah, this is an awesome idea. Let's do this. And then they started doing, like, the Street Fighter Turbo and all their extra versions to pull that off.
Which they kind of did a remake or a reboot with Street Fighter Alpha. Street Fighter Alpha was supposed to be like a remake of the first one. So that's spinning off three games, Street Fighter Alpha 1, 2, and 3. 2, they brought in Jin and some new characters. After they did all these iterations for Street Fighter, even Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter 3 came to the arcades, while Mortal Kombat went to like a virtual reality kind of game, or like that 3D kind of graphics, and then it started going to consoles. I believe Street Fighter 3 is the last game that actually was an arcade game, and then Street Fighter 4 came to arcade. I'm sorry,
yeah,
Street Fighter 4 came to arcade.
4 went to arcade, and also, yeah, 5 is supposed to be arcade, and I believe
5 is PS4 and PC.
Sony, I heard they were talking about doing arcades on that one.
Sony paid for the exclusive for that game to come to the system. To PlayStation 4. Yep.
Oh, dang. So, yeah. Bad news for me.
So, I mean, and then, you know, Mortal Kombat had its hard times because they stopped doing it. And then they kind of did a reboot and came back after they came off the PS2, Xbox, and GameCube. It wasn't until PS3, like, real later on, where they brought, like, Mortal Kombat back. Because they started doing the other one, like Alliances and stuff like that, and they just weren't good games. So when they did the reboot of Mortal Kombat, that's when it started getting good. Then they got Mortal Kombat 10 or Mortal Kombat X, or whatever you want to call it, for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, because they canceled the PS3 and Xbox 360 version.
Yeah, I talked to a buddy who was actually part of that team trying to convert Mortal Kombat X for 360 and PS3, and he described it in words that I don't know if we should be using in our podcast here.
You can.
But let's just say, it was not going to happen. but yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
But yeah, something I was going to say is that, because I think after all the rest of those like iterations of Mortal Kombat before they got to the reboot, I believe that's also when the remaining people from Midway basically were all just going to NetherRealm, because I believe NetherRealm basically bought out all the rest of what Midway had.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, when they really kind of found their stride, was like, okay, we're going to redo all of this, because then they started, you know, they did the reboot of Mortal Kombat. They did Injustice, which is also a phenomenal game.
Yeah.
And Mortal Kombat X. In all honesty, I mean, it did turn me into a Mortal Kombat fan again. I mostly Street Fighter back in the day, but, you know, now I definitely love both of them about equally, so.
Well, they have Mortal Kombat versus DC also.
I'm saying
making it like NetherRealm's making it or Midway making it at that time. We talked about Killer Instinct, and that coming out to Super Nintendo. Killer Instinct 2 came out to the N64, and then Nintendo ended up selling Rare to Microsoft, and that's, you can listen to that on the Microsoft podcast. Then Sega and Namco were still the big guys, because they was doing like the little big ride on, like you could get into a Jeep. You got like the Star Wars, Konami did like Run a Gun, like I said, licensed like X-Men. X-Men had two screens, which led to six player. I think it was six player characters.
No, it was eight player.
It was eight player.
Yeah, it was an eight player because it was like the entire team of the X-Men at the time.
Okay, and they also did a four player version of X-Men. They did some of their own fighting games, and like some of their own beat 'em ups, like Metamorphous Force. I still love that name. Where these people turn into animals and stuff and start beating when they get to a certain thing of power. Mario Kart GP is kind of still one of the biggest Namco games to come out. You can go like the Dave and Buster's or somewhere that has it. A lot of people still love that. Sega, Capcom has, and this is probably only in Japan, it hasn't came to America, North America yet, or it might have came, but you just got to find it. They got a Luigi's Mansion arcade game with Nintendo. And it looks really nice. They also, who else? Someone else got something that just lost, and I just cannot think of it. Go ahead, Ryan, while I think of it. I just lost my train of thought. I think it has to do something with Konami, or it has to do with Nintendo. I got to think about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, because I think nowadays a lot of how the arcades kind of evolved. You know, I think they're much more like, on the fly kind of competition like games, like even in Schaumburg at Woodfield Mall, they have a level 257, which is all like a Pac-Man themed like bar restaurant, and one of the big things they have in there is a like giant four player
where you had the Pac-Man versus
and it's a you know it's kind of how it's kind of evolved now, because I think at home, if you want to play those games, you could get them a billion different ways: Xbox Live, Nintendo eShop, PlayStation Network, Steam, blah 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 blah. So I think they really kind of tapped in the market where nowadays, you're sitting around with your buddies out at a restaurant, you guys are drinking, you're like, well, I'm gonna kick your ass at Pac-Man, and now you can actually have a version that you can do that in.
Right. Oh, Pokken, which is Tekken and Pokemon by Namco and Nintendo. That's supposed to be coming to the Wii U, but they made that as an arcade game too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was coming to arcade too. That's awesome.
Yeah, they showed it off as an arcade game, and they teased it, and then they were just like coming to Japan, and everybody was like, what is this? And everybody was just like, we want this right now. So it's supposed to come to Wii U, I think, sometime next year. But it's called Pokken. It's the Pokemon doing like fighting the Tekken arenas. And it's kind of nice. It's really cool. Nice. There's some 80 games that you guys could still look at. Like the alien one, Xenograph or something like that, Xenoglyph. For arcade.
Real old one?
It's a real old one. It's Xeno something.
Xenophobia.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Running Flash, I think, is one. It's the one where you're like you're shooting and you could go into doors to restore like your gun bullets and come back out. Retronauts just did a talk about it. They like did a micro episode for it. I gotta see where it is. See what it is. You had Spider-Man, Captain America, had a beat 'em up game, like a two player beat 'em up game that came out for Super Nintendo. Like Sega, they had their Sonic stuff, and they got like these big games like House of the Dead. I think they're on House of the Dead 5 or 4. They were different storylines, so that's still going on. Definitely in Japan, pachinkos are still a big thing in arcades. So we don't have them here in America because they're somewhat considered as gambling. I don't know how, but it is. But yeah, arcades, they're kind of they kind of went away, but they're kind of bringing, people are bringing them back, restoring classic games. Some people have actually bought consoles and made arcade cabinets with those arcade games in it.
It's actually something that one of my big things I've always wanted to do in my life is actually build my own arcade cabinet. And, you know, I always wanted to, you know, maybe set it up to like emulate some of the old games. And I think actually, I know a lot of people like dumping on the Ouya.
Yeah.
But I actually own one. And one of the big things I always said, okay, if I'm going to buy this thing, I'm going to support this new idea of, you know, all the open source games and have them all be free to try and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And if it all failed, I'm just going to dump a bunch of emulators on it and run it as an emulator box. So, you know, that's one of my big things, just because, you know, I love that nostalgic feel of being the stand up at an arcade cabinet and,
yes,
you know, just playing.
Just playing. Yeah. So, but that's it. You know, that's our love. What, before we go, Ryan, why do you love video games? Like, what's the beauty of video games? And you could do Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, arcade, what we talked about. You can even talk about PC. Just like, what is it about video games that makes it beautiful to you?
Well, you know, I always see video games, and I've said this for years, even before anybody even like thought of it this way. You know, video games is just another art form. I mean, like movies, some people like going to a museum, look at paintings, look at different art. You know, people like reading books, listen to music. I mean, video games is kind of a very unique form of kind of almost a combination of all of those. And I've always kind of seen that, even if you don't see it like graphically, you know, that's why I would say video, you know, graphics don't make a game. Mainly because, like, even if you don't see it as nothing more than, like, a pixelated mess,
uh-huh.
there's art and there's love and there's, you know, like, a culture in that that's really like no other.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. I love video games because I grew up with them. They provided me with a lot of memories. A lot of great music. It helped me make friends. It helped me do some hard times, some sad times, some good times. Like, you know, it allowed me to get used to first person shooters and being online with other people. It helped create optional opinion. It helped make me write about them. When it came to drawing video games, it was always the ad. And like Capcom was like one of my biggest third party love, after Konami, because they just had great Japanese art, and I always try to emulate that, and that got me into drawing. And that's why, you know, I love Microsoft. I love Sony. I love Nintendo. I love going to the arcades, love playing older games. I love seeing people who love PC. I'm not a PC player, but I love hearing stories and seeing indie people come out with these great ideas on PC, which I think that's cool for me. But thank you, Ryan, for joining me. I know it's kind of a long episode. We had a lot to talk about. We covered a lot of stuff in our discussion. So, once again, I want to thank you. I want to thank Johnny Womack for the Sony bonus and for the Sony talk. I want to thank John O'Hagan for the Microsoft bonus and talking Microsoft talk with me. Adrian Nieto, I want to thank you for talking Nintendo with me and Shovel Knight. Thank you for staying with me for almost 4 hours talking about video games. Everybody, you know, that I talked about with this project, you know, really sacrificed their time. I know I can't repay everybody. I wish I could, but thank you guys for making the beauty of video games successful. Thank you for people for reading the blogs, leaving the comments, you know, sharing it on the page, talking about it, discussing it with friends. I really appreciate it. It was a really big project, really fun. Can't wait to guide you guys read the next project. That'll be hopefully in December. And that one is going to be more podcast than it will be blogging, because it's a little spicy, I should say. Ryan, did I ever tell you about it?
You did, yes, I remember.
Okay, so, yeah, and expect Ryan, hopefully Ryan, or even Chris will be on those, on that discussion. I can't wait to have you guys back on. Anything that you want to give a shout out to, Twitter handle, where can we find you? Go.
Yeah, you can find me, you find my Facebook, Ryan Beeman, or you find me on Twitter, at Red Ronin 14, REDRONIN 14. Yeah, thank you for having me on, man. This is a good time.
You're welcome. I know you're probably about to get into the bed, cause it is kind of late. Any promotional stuff that you want to promote?
I promised my wife I would do this. Check out my wife on, Sissy's Events on Facebook. She does a lot of great vendor events. And if anyone listening has a business that you're looking for a unique way to promote yourself and get yourself out there to probably a few people that you wouldn't normally see, look her up, Sissy's Events on Facebook.
Yes, 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 yes. And you guys can follow me on Twitter at ThatRetroCode, ThatRetroCode. Someone thought it was, thinks this is the Konami code, but I kept it... It could be any code, anything that's retro. It could be like the Samus playing Metroid without her Samus suit. It could be that. Whatever you think what that retro code is. You can also follow me on Facebook under Edward Varnell, EDWARD, V as in Victor, ARNELL. You can email the show at myop2comment@yahoo.com, MYOP, the number 2, COMMENT. Once again, thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Adrian. Thank you, John. And thank you, Johnny, for joining me, making this project successful. Hopefully, you guys will hear more. I am trying to get a podcast about Vanquish going on with my great friend Anthony Cantu. Hopefully, we'll be able to deliver that to you guys next month. We're going to be talking about, well, definitely for me, I think Vanquish feels like Mega Man 3. So that's going to be very interesting, to have that discussion. So thank you guys. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, everybody. Have a great weekend. Have a great holiday of Halloween. If you're going to have a Halloween party, or even if you don't believe it, have a hallelujah party for my Christian friends. You guys throw that one. I will be working, so I won't be partying nothing. I'll probably buy a bag of Snickers. Look, we had that discussion on the deluded geeks. I'm about to keep saying delusional, and it's not that. The deluded geeks had to talk about eating Snicker bars, which we would eat quicker, the little mini packs or a full candy bar. So you have to see, check that podcast when it comes out. But thank you guys. Have a great weekend. And I'm going to celebrate the end of this project the best way I know how. And that's playing the end of thing to Super Mario World. Ryan, any last words?
Thank you. Good night.
And we are out. Peace.